Welcome to SCOTUScast, a project of the Federalist Society for Law and Public Policy Studies. Our contributors join us from around the country to bring you expert commentary on U.S. Supreme Court cases as they are argued and decisions are issued. The Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker.
Thank you for joining us for this post-decision episode of SCOTUScast, Excessive Force and Circuit Precedent Edition. I'm your host, Bridget Flaherty. On April 2, 2018, the Supreme Court decided Casella v. Hughes. In 2010, Andrew Casella, a police officer in Tucson, Arizona, responded to a report of a woman hacking a tree with a kitchen knife before returning into her home. Two other police officers reported to the scene as well. At the scene, another woman, Sharon Chadwick, was standing in the driveway of a nearby house. Hughes reemerged from her house and walked towards Chadwick. A chain-link fence with a locked gate separated the officers from Hughes and Chadwick. The officers told Hughes to drop the knife, but she did not acknowledge the officer's presence, nor did she put down the knife. Casella then shot Hughes from behind the fence, and the three officers jumped the fence and called paramedics who transported Hughes to the hospital to be treated for non-life-threatening injuries. At the time of the incident, all three officers believed Hughes to be a threat to Chadwick. It was later revealed that Chadwick was Hughes' roommate and that Hughes suffers from mental illness. Hughes sued Casella in federal district court, alleging the use of excessive force in violation of the Fourth Amendment. The district court granted summary judgment in favor of Casella, but the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit reversed, holding that the record, viewed in the light most favorable to Hughes, was sufficient to show that Casella violated the Fourth Amendment. The excessive force violation, the Ninth Circuit held, was obvious, and the law was in its view clearly established under analogous circuit precedent. Casella's petition for rehearing en banc was denied over a 7-judge dissent, but the United States Supreme Court thereafter granted certiorari. By a vote of 7-2, the Supreme Court reversed the judgment of the Ninth Circuit and remanded the case. In light of all the circumstances, the court indicated in a per curiam opinion, it was far from obvious that a competent officer would have known that shooting Hughes to protect Chadwick would violate the Fourth Amendment. Moreover, the court added, the Ninth Circuit erred in concluding that its own precedent clearly established that Casella's use of force was excessive. Justice Sotomayor filed a dissenting opinion, which was joined by Justice Ginsburg. And now, to discuss the case, we have Robert Leiter, associate at Arnold & Porter.
This case involved whether a police officer should receive qualified immunity for shooting someone. Like most other qualified immunity cases, the Supreme Court summarily reversed without hearing argument. And like most other qualified immunity cases, the court reached a fact-specific holding that the law enforcement officer should receive qualified immunity. Despite recent critiques over the Supreme Court's qualified immunity jurisprudence, the Supreme Court apparently remains determined to eliminate judicial redress for most unconstitutional police actions. The petitioner in this case was Andrew Casella, a police officer for the University of Arizona in Tucson. Officer Casella shot Amy Hughes, the respondent. Let me begin with a detailed recounting of the facts. Because this case was decided on summary judgment against Hughes, the court provided the version of the facts most favorable to her. In May 2010, Officer Casella and another officer, Alex Garcia, were notified on their radio that someone had called 911 to report a woman hacking a tree with a kitchen knife. A few minutes later, the person who called 911 flagged them down. The person provided officers with a description of the woman and stated that she had been acting erratically. A third officer also arrived on scene. Officer Garcia saw a woman, later identified as Sharon Chadwick, standing next to a car in the driveway of a nearby house. The officer then saw another woman, respondent Hughes, come out of the house holding a kitchen knife by her side. Hughes matched the description of the woman hacking the tree. She walked toward Chadwick and stopped about 6 feet from her. The officers were behind a chain-link fence on another property, and a locked gate separated them from Chadwick and Hughes. As Hughes emerged, all three officers drew their guns, and they twice told Hughes to drop the knife. Chadwick told the officers to take it easy. Hughes was calm. She didn't threaten anyone with the knife, but she also did not drop the knife. Officer Casella then shot Hughes 4 times through the fence. Hughes suffered significant but not life-threatening injuries. A subsequent investigation revealed that Hughes had a history of mental illness. Hughes, upset with Chadwick over a $20 debt, apparently had threatened to kill Chadwick's dog. When officers had first spotted Chadwick, she had emerged from the house to get $20 from her car. Chadwick said that she never felt in danger, but all three officers thought Hughes was a threat to Chadwick when Hughes came out of the house with a knife. Hughes contended that Officer Casella's conduct constituted an unreasonable seizure and filed an excessive force claim under Section 1983. The district court granted summary judgment to Officer Casella, but the Ninth Circuit reversed. The Court of Appeals held both that Officer Casella's conduct violated the Fourth Amendment and that the constitutional violation was clearly established based on circuit precedent. A divided Court of Appeals denied en banc review with seven judges dissenting. On the constitutional question, the Supreme Court refused to decide whether Officer Casella violated the Fourth Amendment by shooting Hughes. The court simply reiterated that officers may use deadly force where the officer has probable cause to believe that the suspect poses a threat of serious physical harm either to the officer or to others, and that the reasonableness of the officer's action must be judged from the perspective of the reasonable officer on the scene, not with the benefit of 20/20 hindsight. These rules came from earlier decisions in Tennessee against Garner and Graham versus Connor, but they are phrased as vague standards, not clear action-guiding rules. That is important for the second question, whether Officer Casella should receive qualified immunity. On the second question, the court held that Officer Casella should receive qualified immunity. The court emphasized courts must grant qualified immunity unless the unlawfulness of an officer's actions was beyond debate. Although the court reiterated that its precedents do not require a precise case on point to make the law beyond debate, the court expressed special frustration that lower courts, especially the Ninth Circuit, have looked to whether the law was clearly established with too high a level of generality. In this case, the Ninth Circuit cited several decisions that it believed put Officer Casella on notice that his conduct was unlawful. The court examined those decisions and found none of them sufficiently analogous. The court also emphasized that Officer Casella had made a split-second decision whether Hughes had placed Chadwick in danger. Justice Sotomayor, joined by Justice Ginsburg, dissented. Justice Sotomayor objected to the majority's characterization of the facts. Viewed in the light most favorable to Hughes, Justice Sotomayor argued that Hughes had made no aggressive or threatening conduct, nor did officers suspect her of a crime. In fact, officers had arrived just to check on her welfare. Although officers warned Hughes twice to drop the knife, those two warnings were given in quick succession. Officer Casella then shot Hughes without giving Hughes enough time to process the officer's demand. She noted that the two other officers at the scenes had not fired their weapons. Based on this information, Justice Sotomayor argued that a reasonable jury can conclude that Hughes did not pose an imminent danger to Chadwick and that Officer Casella's use of force was unnecessary. Like the majority, Justice Sotomayor also analyzed prior precedent, which she believed placed Officer Casella on fair warning that his actions were unreasonable. The court's excessive force decisions under the Fourth Amendment have become increasingly divorced from common law and criminal law justifications. If this were a criminal case, Officer Casella could not claim a privilege to use deadly force to protect Chadwick unless he reasonably believed that such force was necessary to protect her against the imminent and unlawful use of force by Hughes. The current qualified immunity decisions fall seriously short in three critical respects. First, the court's general reasonable requirement from Graham has failed to incorporate the necessity requirement. A person is not justified in using force if he can eliminate the threat by nonviolent means. One of the central disputes between the majority and Justice Sotomayor's dissent is whether Officer Casella could reasonably believe that his actions were necessary in the circumstances. The majority emphasizes reasonableness but pays little attention to necessity. Second, the court has watered down the reasonable belief requirement by adding a second layer of deference to officer decision-making. Both in tort and in criminal law, the reasonable belief requirement confers considerable immunity on individuals using force. A person acting in self-defense, for example, does not need to know for certain that the person against whom he uses force is a threat. He only needs a reasonable belief, which leaves considerable room for mistaken but reasonable beliefs. The court's qualified immunity jurisprudence adds a second layer of immunity on top of the reasonable belief standard. The court will not allow officers to be held liable unless courts have found liability in closely analogous fact patterns. The decisions immunize officers not only for their reasonable conduct, but also for substantial unreasonable conduct. The court has never justified its double deference in police use of force cases. Third, the court's emphasis, if not obsession, on the specificity of prior precedent is oblivious to why the law of justification incorporates standards. Cases of self-defense and defense of others generally involve novel and complex factual circumstances. The law cannot possibly anticipate these circumstances. As a result, the law of justification, just like the law of negligence, incorporates action-guiding standards and then leaves juries to decide whether the conduct met the standard. In fact, in the lower courts, the attorney for Officer Casella argued that the law wasn't in dispute at all. It was merely a question of fact. By using qualified immunity, the court has diminished the role of the jury to police government misconduct. Moreover, the court's repeated decisions requiring prior precedent on point effectively insulate government officials from illegal conduct unless the plaintiff can happen to find a prior case directly on point. And of course, it has become increasingly difficult to find a case on point because in hard cases like this one, courts decide cases on qualified immunity without first determining whether the conduct was unconstitutional. More broadly, as Professor William Bode has explained, there are many other problems with the court's qualified immunity decisions. Among the most serious is that the court's expansion of qualified immunity cannot be reconciled by the text or history of Section 1983. Although Justice Thomas flagged this issue in a recent concurrence, he was noticeably silent in this case. The court, moreover, does not apply its certiorari criteria evenly. The court is much more likely to grant a case to provide a government official with qualified immunity, as it did here, than it is to reverse a decision erroneously denying a citizen's day in court. During his confirmation hearings, Chief Justice John Roberts famously analogized the judge's role to an umpire calling balls and strikes. But the court's opinion in Casella versus Hughes shows that when citizens seek redress against government officials, the fix is in. The proximate effect of this decision is to again send a strong warning to lower courts that, absent the most flagrant misconduct, government officials are to have no liability for their unconstitutional action.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. SCOTUSCast is a project of the Federalist Society, a not-for-profit educational organization of conservative and libertarian law students, law professors, and lawyers, founded upon the principles that the state exists to preserve freedom, that the separation of governmental powers is central to our Constitution, and that it is emphatically the province and duty of the judiciary to say what the law is, not what it should be. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast series, including SCOTUSCast and Practice Group Podcasts, on iTunes or Google Play. For an archive of past podcasts, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at fedsoc.org/multimedia. That's fedsoc.org/multimedia.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.